We're not going to be able to solve our problems if we get distracted by sideshows and carnival barkers.
Welcome to the second gala, Donald Trump edition of It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving.
And where are you, Ron? Because I'm Ken Rudin in Las Vegas.
Well, I'm here in Washington, D.C., but Donald Trump is there with you in Vegas.
Well, this is a Thursday morning podcast, and Thursday evening, come meet Donald Trump, the flyer says. He'll be hosted by the active Republican women of Las Vegas. He's at Treasure Island Thursday evening. Doors open to the public 6 p.m. Donald Trump speaks at 7 p.m. Ken Rudin commits suicide 8 p.m. So it's all on the schedule.
Wow. Yeah. That is quite a program. But later on, after the Vegas hit, Ken, I assume you'll be coming back to Washington at some point. Donald Trump will be back by Saturday night to be the guest of which news organization at the White House Correspondents' Dinner at the Washington Hilton? I ask you, Ken Rudin.
The Sci-Fi Channel?
No. And we've also had guesses here in the studio of Huffington Post, Bloomberg. Of course, the first guest was Politico, but no, all those are wrong.
Oh, I know. Hair America.
Okay. I'm going to cut the suspense here.
Wait, is this on?
Donald Trump is going to be a guest at the White House Correspondents' Dinner of the Washington Post.
Really?
So we can speculate as to what that may mean about the prospective future of Mr. Trump or the prospective future of the Washington Post, whichever you prefer.
Right. I think it says a lot about both.
If he sits down at a table with another guest of the Washington Post, Bob Woodward, he'll be sitting next to someone who this morning compared Mr. Trump to Joe McCarthy.
The funniest thing, the most surreal thing is yesterday when I'm at the airport and everybody's saying, CNN is saying, oh, how ridiculous Donald Trump is, how ridiculous the birther issue is, and yet they played it all day long.
Oh, it's interesting.
And and not only that, here we are talking about it all podcast long. What's wrong with us? What's happened to us?
What's wrong with any of us? We have completely taken leave of our senses, and we are allowing ourselves to be completely hooked in. And I do feel the hook deep in my cheek at this point as I say this. But the Washington Post also, they did a fact check on his press conference yesterday and found that virtually every statement that he made that pretended to be a fact, such as saying that Libya's oil goes to China, and that's a major export partner for their oil, virtually every statement that he made was a factually provably false statement, I guess, except when he said he was very, very proud of himself.
And yet, as much as this, I just want to tear my hair out, I look at the polls and it says that Donald Trump is one among, if not the leading Republican candidate for 2012. He's up there. Of course, this free nonstop publicity certainly helps.
All right, but that's really what, but in a sense, it's not the polls so much of people who do you prefer to see as president next. It's a poll of who are you hearing a lot about?
That's ultimately what the numbers show.
Some of the polls are quite explicitly that, and those are the ones that show him 3 or 4 to 1, the preferred candidate in terms of whom people are hearing about.
One thing you can certainly say about Donald Trump is he is clever because he knows how to play these games to the hilt, but how he kept talking about, well, it was really the Clintons who brought this up in 2008.
I've just been trying to get an answer to Hillary's question.
Exactly. It was Hillary who asked the question in 2008. I'm just trying to help out.
I am really happy, and honestly, I'm very proud that I was able to bring this to a point. Nobody else was. The Clintons during their campaign weren't. All of the other people that talked about it, for years they weren't. I am really honored by this.
But if you go back to 2000, remember, he was pro-choice. He was for universal health care. He was talking about taxing all the wealthy.
You mean
and
Obama?
Yet, this is Donald Trump in 1999 when he was talking about running as a Reform Party candidate for president. And the fact is, everybody just, I mean, if Romney Care is going to sink Mitt Romney, if Mike Huckabee's record on taxes as governor of Arkansas is going to disqualify him for running, if Sarah Palin is resigning the governorship is going to hurt her, why doesn't anything hurt Donald Trump?
Because those people are all actual politicians, people who have actually run for office and served in office, however briefly, people who have actually been in the game and have something to show for it, both as a record and as, bumps and bruises. Donald Trump has none of these things. He's a fictional candidate. He makes up the things that he says. He is a fictional production from start to finish. And when he makes it into polls for the purpose of the amusement of the American public, he does pretty well because nobody's taking this process very seriously thus far.
It makes you wonder why somebody like Haley Barbour would not want to be part of this circus.
Yeah. Well, Haley Barbour bowed out on Monday this week, dashing the hopes that we had for a Haley Barbour Nikki Haley ticket. All right, you are nuts, but Ken, I'm going to give you props here. I'm going to give you a big salute. since you're on the other side of the country, you didn't think Haley Barbour was going to run for president.
Well,
ever.
Here's the thing. I said all along there's no way he runs because there's just so much in his past. And I don't know, I'm not alluding to any secret rumor that I know of and nobody else knows of. I just thought there was just too much to be picked apart by the political media. But having said that, he was doing all the things that made it look like he was running. He was establishing staff. He was becoming a presence in New Hampshire.
He was
Iowa,
losing 40 pounds.
Which is proof that I'm not running for president. But it just seems just so remarkable that somebody who's doing all the things, but ultimately, I think Haley Barbour is an extremely smart guy. He just knows politics inside and out. And I kind of think that this is just not a good time to be running for president, given if we're talking about a time when Donald Trump can take over the political conversation in this country. I mean, when Obama was talking about, you know, the carnival and the sideshows, yes, he was talking about Donald Trump, but he was also talking about what has become political journalism in this country. So anyway, I don't think that Haley Barbour wanted to be part of it. He wasn't going anywhere in the polls. Not that anybody is really going anywhere in the polls.
You know, wait a minute. There is a direction that everybody is going in the polls. Everyone in the polls is going down. Part of the reason that Donald Trump is doing well in a comparative sort of sense, in a fictive sort of sense, is because right now people are down on all the actual politicians, the actual decision makers, the actual take responsibility people. I just read a poll that John Boehner's numbers are much poorer than they were when he began, not only among Republicans, but particularly among independents. Of course, Democrats never particularly cared for him, but he's down among Democrats, too.
Right.
And all of this, I think, reflects the same sort of dynamic and energy that's affecting President Obama's polls, which are clearly down from the beginning of the year. We talked about that last week. And individual governors around the country, particularly the new ones elected last fall, are all down quite a bit since their inaugural days. Gas prices are high. Jobs are still not coming back. Growth is anemic. We just saw that growth for the first quarter was a little less than 2% on an annualized basis. That's much weaker than the previous quarter. So that's disappointing. People are in a bad mood, and they are taking it out on whichever politician you ask them about.
Exactly. Remember what happened in the summer of 2009, not long after President Obama was elected and the Democrats still had some momentum. We saw evidence of this Tea Party anger against Democrats in all these town hall meetings. Arlen Specter, a Democrat at the time, Claire McCaskill, all this outrage, and now we're seeing outrage directed at Republicans like Alan West of Florida, like Dan Webster of Florida, like Paul Ryan of Wisconsin, that all the questions of the anger, the uncertainty about the future of Medicare, what's going to happen to seniors. Again, it's with the Republicans in charge, albeit only in the House. The Republican House members are now feeling the same kind of heat Democrats felt in 2009.
And so are some of the Democrats who are going out in the field. In other words, anybody who raises their head up more than a hair is going to get fired at in this environment. And the Paul Ryan town halls in particular, I think, are interesting. He went out in his district, which is not an enormous geographical district, in southeastern Wisconsin, held 19, I believe, listening sessions, as he calls them, and, of course, got a lot of heat for his Medicare plan, got a lot of heat for lowering tax rates for the wealthy. He says, of course, he's balancing that by taking away a lot of their loopholes. That doesn't sell terribly well. Of course, the Medicare changes are very disturbing to people, even people he says will not be affected. The Medicaid changes will affect a lot of people in his district. And he's out there and he's taking a certain amount of flack, but he also has a fair number of supporters at some of those events. So I suspect that the House Republicans are going to come back to town not so chastened and not so freaked out about the reaction that they got and say, basically, we're taking the bold steps. It's time for the president to do the same. And I think that they're going to stick by their guns.
I agree with you, and especially because it's kind of difficult for the Democrats to also be pounding their chest saying, well, we told you so, when gas prices are just up and up and up and, you know, increasing and increasing and increasing. So the problem is, I mean, it almost reminds me, and not to say this because I'm in Nevada, home of Harry Reid, but it reminds me of what happened to Harry Reid in 2010. His numbers were terrible. They didn't like the way he voted. They wanted him replaced. Obama's numbers are not terrible. They're not great. And there are a lot of complaints about the economy and or concerns about the economy, certainly the way gas prices are heading. And yet, look at the field. I mean, you know, again, we're talking about a year in advance before the primaries and caucuses get underway. But look at the Republican field who are opposing him. And that's, I think, what's giving a lot of Republicans pause about their chances in 2012.
Ken, you are in Nevada, and that is always interesting because Nevada, while one of the smaller states, has really become one of the pivotal political states in the country, a little bit like New Hampshire and Iowa. It is an early voting state in the primary season, but it also seems to have a lot of political dramas of its own. You mentioned mentioned already Harry Reid and his surprising reelection last year, given his terrible numbers. Some of the same characters are involved this year, now that John Ensign has resigned, left the Senate abruptly. In the midst of his term, he had already said he was going to retire at the end of this term.
He said he wanted to be with Jim Gibbons' family. That's a great joke in Nevada.
I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is. And for the listener in Nevada, it will be a thigh slapper. In place of Senator Ensign, the Republican governor there in Nevada, Brian Sandoval, has appointed the Republican congressman from the outer part of the state, the Cow counties, away from the Las Vegas area, Dean Heller, who is taking the oath when the Senate returns, to become the new senator from Nevada, the junior senator.
Right. John Ensign announced he's going to resign effective May 3rd. Now, of course, coincidentally, on May 4th, he was supposed to testify before the Senate Ethics Committee under oath about his transactions with the husband of his former lover, his best friend, and whether that constituted a violation of his office, which it probably did. It's not just so much that John Ensign couldn't raise enough money to run for reelection or that his family would be hurt, but which is all true.
Or that his brand was completely in the dumper.
Well, exactly right. And that's why, effective May 3rd, when he resigns, Dean Heller will be the next senator. And, of course, Dean Heller was already running for the Senate seat. Matter of fact, he announced his candidacy even before John Ensign announced he would resign or retire or not run again. So, obviously, Dean Heller is a big leg up for the Republicans. They were really nervous and scared, in fact, about the prospect of John Ensign seeking another term. And now they're going to have an incumbent come in the November 2012 election.
They will have an incumbent they actually want to get behind. Now, they were also worried about another primary next year with Sharon Angle, the woman who, of course, won the primary there in 2010 and then lost to Harry Reid, an improbable feat. But she's still in the picture in Nevada, and a lot of the Tea Party people there still like her, and she's got a plan for getting back into the limelight.
And the Republicans are scared of that, just as they felt that they could have beaten Harry Reid with any other candidate in 2010 other than Sharon Angle. Angle now announced that she's going to run for the House seat that Dean Heller is vacating, and according to state law. By the way, for the first time in history, there will be a vacancy in the House delegation in Nevada. That's pretty amazing, because it seems like it happens everywhere. Anyway, it's the first time, and Sharon Angle says she's going to run in the special election, which could be a free-for-all election, to succeed Dean Heller in the 2nd District. She ran against Heller once before when Heller was first elected to Congress. Angle lost that primary, but she's running again, and it's clear that the Republican establishment here is very, very nervous about Sharon Angle because they feel that, yes, she does have her committed support among Tea Party folks, but the feeling is that she's lost too many of them since the 2010 election, and it's very possible that the Democrats could win that 2nd congressional district.
All right, and in terms of running against Dean Heller for the new 6-year term in the Senate seat that was previously John Ensign's, the Democrats are rallying behind their congresswoman from the Las Vegas area, Shelley Berkley.
Right, and she may not have been everybody's first choice. There were other Democrats that I think there's reports that Harry Reid might have preferred, but Berkley has gone out front. She has announced her candidacy, and it looks like Heller versus Berkley in 2012. A race that could very well determine the control of the Senate. Right now, the Republicans only need 4-3 if they win the presidency. It's going to be obviously another top-notch, top-line Senate race. There will be an incumbent in the race, and that will be Dean Heller.
That's right. And this is one of the few Republican incumbencies in the country that's kind of hanging in the balance. Most of the vulnerable senators who are going to be on the ballot in 2012 will be Democrats, about 2/3 of those who are running. And that's going to make this and every other Senate race the one Senate race that could decide the difference of who controls the Senate.
But there are Republicans who are nervous. If Olympia Snowe is beaten in the primary, although right now she doesn't have a strong opponent. In Maine, but if she's beaten by a Tea Party person, the Democrats could certainly pick up that seat.
Same scenario in Indiana.
Well, suddenly Dick Lugar is not conservative enough, at least not for the Tea Party folks in Indiana. And Richard Murdoch, the state treasurer, is running for that seat.
Nobody. This is not somebody completely out of the woodwork. Tea Party has a real candidate there.
Right, and he has run statewide before.
Someone who has a name who has not run statewide before and may never do so is the latest member of the Paul family dynasty down in Texas. Robert Paul. Of course, we all know Ron Paul, who this week announced he would have an exploratory committee to make a third run for the presidency as a Republican. He also ran once as a Libertarian. And of course, we know Rand Paul, who is the new Republican senator from Kentucky. And now comes Robert Paul, another doctor from the family in Texas, touted to run for the Senate from Texas, but maybe not going to do it.
Well, he said he's considering the race, and it's just interesting how Ron Paul, who has been seen by many people as a fringe character, and yet he's playing a major role, one, in the consideration for 2012, and two, he may just be establishing a Paul dynasty if Robert Paul does run for the Senate. But going back to Ron Paul for a second, you know, we keep talking about how, despite the fact that he wins all these straw polls and he raises a ton of money on the internet, he was not a factor at all in any of the primaries or caucuses in 2008. I see a different scenario, a different landscape for 2012 that could help Ron Paul.
You see Ron Paul actually organizing a substantial vote in New Hampshire, because I don't see it in Iowa.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's certainly possible. First, I mean, he's speaking the same language that the Tea Party is speaking, and that is constitutional government, however they want to define it. And, of course, it's their definition of the Constitution that we're talking about here. And he also talks about, you know, limiting the size of government and the debt. And he's been talking about that for decades.
But you have to ignore all the other things that Ron Paul talks about that sound much more like a libertarian and don't sound much like the Tea Party. Getting out of all of our foreign commitments, for example, and slashing defense spending, that
Absolutely.
Sort of thing. And I don't think the Tea Party is going to embrace that if they've got other options among the many candidates on the Republican side, assuming there are many candidates, for 2012.
And Ron Paul does sound like that old John Birch Society character or that stereotype from the 60s, you know, pulling out of the UN and abolishing the Federal Reserve and things like that. But he does have his committed and very loyal bunch of following. But you talk about other potential Tea Party candidates, Michelle Bachmann almost has that bridge between the Tea Party fiscal conservatives and the social conservatives, who, as we know, has, you know, play a strong role in the Iowa caucuses.
That's right. And I would see her as being much more of a player in Iowa. Iowa has been good to Minnesota candidates before, and she is going to be one of maybe two with Tim Pawlenty coming down from Minnesota. I think she would have a stronger appeal to the social conservatives and the Tea Party activists in Iowa than her fellow Minnesotan Tim Pawlenty. I think she would do better than Ron Paul if she really runs and if she can more or less restrain her past tendency for gaffes and embarrassments. I actually see her as trying very hard to mature as a political figure and to appeal to more of a grown-up sensibility in recent weeks, partly as she continues to crowd Sarah Palin out of the field.
One thing to watch next Thursday, Fox News is hosting a debate in South Carolina, the Republican field. We still don't know, less than a week away, we still don't know which candidates or prospective candidates will show up. We don't know if Romney, it looks like Pawlenty will show up. It looks like Newt Gingrich may show up. We expect Herman Cain, Rick Santorum. But we don't know, is Mitt Romney going to be there? We know that, is Donald Trump going to be there?
Well, I don't think Donald Trump qualifies, because Fox was saying that they were only going to take people who had either exploratory committees or had announced. So I think that would cut into several of the names you mentioned.
Right. And then and does anybody care? I mean, it just seems like we keep saying how impatient we are, but it seems like everybody's impatient for this race to begin except the actual Republican field of candidates. And so this may very well be a debate with fewer candidates than anyone expected.
There are also some of the Republican candidates going up into the woods of New Hampshire for an earlier event this Friday, April 29th. It was not quite as stellar a list as Fox is expecting down in South Carolina, but we'll have to see who actually shows up and how much we can learn about that. One other event on Friday that we want to mention on April 29th, there is a major launching down in Florida.
This is great news, and not only is it great news, it's no matter whether you're a Democrat or Republican, whatever your political ideology is, it is very heartening to know that Gabrielle Giffords, the congresswoman from Arizona who was seriously wounded in that assassination attempt back in January in Tucson, she's rapidly improving, her health is progressing. She will be able to fly to Florida to see her husband, the astronaut Mark Kelly, in the launch of the space shuttle. And the fact that Gabby Giffords, given the horrific nature of her injury, the fact that she's improving enough to make this step is just very good news. It's one of the few feel-good pieces of news in the political atmosphere.
And President Obama and the First Lady are going down to watch the launch of the shuttle and see the shuttle crew off. And that's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/politics.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin in Las Vegas, courtesy of member station KNPR.
Join us again next week for It's All Politics from NPR.
Fly me to the moon. Let me play among the stars. And let me see what spring is like on
Jupiter and Mars. In other words, hold my hand. In other words, baby, kiss me.
This is the only podcast recorded this week anywhere in the English-speaking world that said nothing about the royal wedding.